Accession number 2928879, reel 12.
Extra, you know. They got a bit extra, but they did all right, you know.
Right.
They were like us, they took it in their stride, and they just enjoyed the war mostly. But.
Oh, so what would you do? Would you get a pass to go into town, or?
No, I never had any passes. We always had a identification.
Mm-hmm.
There was one pass we were issued at one time, which allowed us to go into various barracks at different places and draw stores if we needed it.
Uh-huh.
In one case, we were on a truck going up to from Cabrit to the Medway, up to Alexander Harbour, and the truck broke down.
Right.
They couldn't repair it, so I went to the nearest depot there, IAC depot, and I showed them this pass, and it was just say that any equipment that they needed would be applied right away if possible,
right.
Or as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And then the reference was to, I forget where it was now, GHQ anyway, it was an office in GHQ anyway.
Right.
He went to the GHQ in Cairo a couple of times with Sutherland. He had to go there for various orders, and the sergeant always went with him or somebody, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that was quite a good place to be.
Right.
And a huge, spacious place it was.
Uh-huh.
There were lots of yards and rooms and halls and everything else. You didn't know where you were half the time. But
right.
But it was a busy place, no?
Right.
In fact, it was the same place, I think. It was used by Allenby during the First World War. That was GHQ there. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of the place though. They had a name for it. It was GHQ Cairo, but
could have got a good meal, though.
There was a special name for it, a local name it had.
Right.
I can't remember now, though. But that was one of the advantages of being with the Special Forces. You went everywhere, you
know? Yeah. Yeah. And what would you do for your leisure time?
Well, we didn't have a great deal of leisure, we never had a lot of leave.
Went to cinema, or...?
Where we did go for leave, if I remember once, was up into Beirut, up into Syria.
Uh-huh.
We were allowed a week's leave up there.
Right.
I think we had that before we went to Bardia, we had that, I think.
Did you play sport at all? Was there any...
No, we didn't have a lot of time for sport, not for organised sport at all.
Right.
We were far too busy, you know. It wasn't like the regular battalion, they were stationed for about 4 or 5 weeks sometimes in one place, and they could get organised, but we didn't.
Never went to the cinema, or...?
Yes, we went to the cinema quite often in Alexandria. We'd stay at the YMCA, something like that. There was YMCAs and other sort of clump where you could stay. Run by the army in some cases, you know.
Yeah.
You could stay there, especially in Alex, there's plenty of places there, and then we'd stay there and go to the cinema, or the... opera.
Right.
And to go on the beach, Stanley Beach, we had plenty of time. But most time we ever had off for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were either back at Cabrit training or put on a boat and sent off somewhere, you know.
Was it English films came out, did he get newsreel in that as well if you went to the cinema?
And the noticeable thing about it was there was no smoking allowed all that time back in the cinema.
Right.
Whether it was just fear of fire or what, or I don't think it was health reasons in those days.
Mm. How often would you get post from home?
Paid?
The post, mail, or from post. Letters, you know.
Oh, fairly often.
Right.
The letters came through quite often, but ours didn't get through very much, because, as I say, we were off in the desert or out at sea or off somewhere. We couldn't always post. But we managed to send telegrams and quick letters. I forget what they're called, letter cards, I think they were called. Just a sheet there, you just wrote it on the sheet, folded it up, put it in the army post office, and off it went.
Through the
There were a lot of those about, army post office in various places.
Right. Did you get newspapers?
No, I can't remember newspapers. I remember the French newspapers.
Right.
There were English newspapers. Newspapers in English in Alex, in Cairo. I can't remember any English newspapers at all.
How did you know then what was going on in the war? What was going on in Japan or in Russia?
By radio, mostly.
Right.
the radio with information. And in fact, we were kept informed most of the time what was going on. You get a lecture now and again by some officer.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't they try and say that when the Battle of Stalingrad was going on, or...
Yeah, well, we heard all that. That was probably in the papers, I think, but I can't remember being in the papers.
But you knew what was going on with the war, how the war was going, though?
Well, not specifically, no. We didn't know a great deal. We knew that they were fighting in Russia and various other places, but we didn't know particularly how it was going in all the time, but we had a general idea of what was going on. For example, the Holocaust, we knew nothing about that for a while.
No.
We just heard various rumours about it.
Yeah.
And Armenian massacres, long before the war, that was. We heard all about that. There's a lot of Armenians in Palestine, isn't there?
Right.
Quite white-looking people there, and intelligent people too, and of course, they were always full of it.
Did you have an idea of what was going on at home, you know, with rationing and the bombing, or...?
It kept us up to date with that. I think it kept a lot of it from us, you know. Because we didn't realise how badly London was being bombed.
Yeah.
Until we heard through our own post, through our own families, about the Plymouth. That was the only time we heard how bad it was, you know, in Plymouth. But we didn't hear a great deal more. But then, as I said before, it might have varied with other troops, you know. With the organised battalions, they probably got a lot more information than we did. But
yeah.
We were travelling around so much, we couldn't remember a lot of it.
Mm.
Didn't get of it.
Mm. Did you ever come across SS troops? Did you know the difference between SS and normal, the normal German army, the Wehrmacht?
No, I don't think so. I remember the SS, there were SS troops in El Adam against the Australians up there, because the Australians who shifted... They shifted sectors now and again, because they would come down into our sector, and we'd hear about it, and they were talking about the SS troops there, but they were mostly in tanks.
Uh-huh.
Because it was a marvellous tank country up there, in the El Adam sector.
Yeah.
It was where the Germans would break through anyway if they had to. It was the only place with suitable for tanks, you see.
Mm.
And it was hard work for the troops there, just in open sangars and very few trenches or anything, you know. So
right. Did people feel differently about the SS than the rest of the Germans?
No, I think the only criticism we had of the SAS was from the German troops themselves, the average German soldier. They didn't like them.
What if you captured one?
Well,
if you captured
them,
Germans, they'd moan about them.
There were SS among them.
Right.
I'm trying to, just to recall it, was it? I remember things sometimes.
That's right, though.
On the queue, but not otherwise. But there's no doubt... That the German took the average soldier, Jerry himself, he didn't like the SS troops, because he was always criticising about their privileges and things like that, and how they were able to out-command and everything else, the other troops, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't have much to do with German officers, never saw them, only German prisoners.
So did you speak much to German prisoners? Was there any talking?
No, They didn't speak a lot themselves. The Italians were very voluble. No, they were always talking. In fact, the Italians were there making... They'd make something out of anything there. They used to make cigarette lighters from bits of old metal there. Really good ones, and they work as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd sell them to us. They exchange for various things, like food or something. You know. But they kept themselves busy, but the Jerrys weren't quite so that... Mind you, these weren't big permanent camps. They were huge areas surrounded by wire and the huts and tents, and that was all.
Before they were taken back.
Right. But they used to come in. They were some near Cabrit, for example, and we had Italians in the mess, acting as waiters and things like that.
Right.
And they were quite friendly, you know. They were treated all right by the SAS and the SBS as well.
Do you remember any of the films you saw?
The films.
Hmm.
No, I know there were open air cinemas in that area.
Organised by the army,
units. No, by Egyptians, Egyptian civilians. Because there were quite a little small townships all the way down from Alexander all the way down the canal, and that Ismailia, that was one of the big towns right on the canal.
Mm.
They had two cinemas there,
So some of the Egyptians were doing quite well out of all this.
Near the camp they had one, and it was surrounded by a wall. And you couldn't, you had to go in through the gateway and pay to get in there, you see. Or else you had to climb up the wall and look from there. But of course for those summer nights and everything else, you know, it was quite warm. A couple of our chaps tried to climb on a ladder one day to get in there, and he was the son of a policeman, a police inspector in England. He tried to go up a ladder, he's a big chap, and he fell near the top and broke his leg and never saw him again. He's busy by the Indians. But we paid to go up. They were English films and Arabic films as well, is it?
Right.
Quite a lot of them. But I can't remember any of the English films. I remember a huge placard up with Clark Gable on it at one time at Ashmolea, advertising a cinema, you know. But then this was all back in the beginning, this is ages ago. But
yeah. So when you went to the beach, what was it? Was there swimming? And
yes, it was marvellous on the beach there. Stanley Beach, if you call it, just outside Alexandria.
Right.
And adjacent to the barracks and things like that, married families there. And it was like a like a British colony there for a while. With all the troops, married families and things, you know. And they were still there, they never went home. They stayed there, the families did, in Egypt.
Okay.
Mm. What they did when the Jerry's came down, I don't know, but when they came to Alamein, I wasn't about then, but
and Cabrit was down on the canal, was it?
Yeah, about halfway down, yes. It's on the
was the canal busy? Constant stream of ships coming through, or
always, yes. There's a straight canal, you know, the Cutaway Canal from Port Said to Ishmaelia, and after Ishmaelia, it went through a big salt lake.
Yeah,
it was a small salt lake that one, and then there was another cutting of canal to the Great Salt Lake, and just inside the Great Salt Lake was Cabrit. There was a point there, was there. As you know by that card, it was an engineering, station, you know, for the Egyptian engineers who maintained the canal.
Was there a town nearby, or was it just the camp? Was there a town nearby, or was it just the camp?
No, there wasn't anything there.
There's nothing there.
Just an isolated maintenance station.
Right.
That little house there, and I think there were some women there as well. Like families living there. It was all, but Cabrit was all, the camp was all around that one. And then there was a straight road down to Suez, it didn't take long. And a little bit further down, there was a huge pointed monument to, like an obelisk, to the First World War troops that were there.
Oh.
They were stationed all the way down there, weren't
they? Yeah, yeah. So was there an airstrip as well?
Pardon?
Was there an airstrip?
Well, there was an aerodrome at Cabrit, just off there. It's, something here. I think. The airstrip was just behind there, just behind the slight rise there, going out towards the hills, all around there. The SDS was here, just behind there, SBS here. The Navy was just behind there, operating from the pier as well, you know. That was the station there. But that's where the aerodrome was. It was a bomber, Wellington bomber aerodrome. And at various times they used to take off, according to the wind, I suppose, you see. They used to take off over the Salt Lake. And now and again, because of the temperature or something or other, they didn't get the lift.
Right.
And they went straight into the water. We had to go and rescue them at one time. One was there, was into the lake, a nose down and just a tail sticking out. And one of the gunners had crawled out from midships and climbed up onto the tail. The others got away all right, but he couldn't go, he was gradually going. We got to him with the canoes and rescued him, so he was happy.
How videos.
There were one or two crashes there as well. But it was never bombed at all, not that aerodrome.
Right.
It was right halfway down the canal, we see, I suppose, as well. And then now and again they take off, one of them would take off with a huge circular disc under it. Go up the canal and up and down the canal. It was a mine detector of some sort, whether it was electric mines or magnetic mines or what. But anyway, it would set them off. But the Jerry's had come down and dropped mines on the canal, isn't it?
Through the canal?
Yeah, not the canal, yeah.
Would they?
Yeah.
Well, with submarines? Yeah.
No, no, with the aircraft.
With the airplanes?
Yeah, flying, well, Savoyas they were mostly, so they must have been Italian. But they used to fly thousands of feet high and drop them in from all that height. At least they tried to, but it's mostly in, they mostly dropped around the big salt lakes, because that was a big target, isn't it? But now and again, they did drop in the canal.
Gosh.
Not a great deal of them, I don't think, but... We heard some going off now and again, you know, but but there was no trail through the salt lake. The ships used to come out of the canal cutting, go straight across the middle of the salt lake, a couple of miles, and then into the other canal cutting as well.
Yeah.
But there was nothing there to guide them at all. But they're huge ships, you know.
So you did your fulbot training and that on the salt lake, would you?
On the salt lake, it's just around Cabrit itself, right. You know, and the area.
Was it warm?
Well, not even warm. I used to fling a few grenades in and get some fish, either to supplement the rations and things, you know.
So the mid was quite cold when you had to go up there, was it?
The mid was cold in places, but not in around Greece. Lovely around Greece, isn't it? Beautiful. Well, we didn't go in the water at... on roads, anyway. But we did on Lesbos once, I think. Still far back, you know. Anyway, what was it you were going to...
Yeah, we all went off the point there, didn't we? What we got up to, as I was listening through the tape, we've got a good account of everything up to where you actually... the details of what happened with when you joined the SAS. You came back from the Thorn, where you'd been up...
That's right,
to split, and you came back from there.
And went straight up in the desert, more or less, yes.
You went to Cabrit first, or...?
Yeah, I went to Cabrit first. The jeep took us down to Cabrit.
From Alex?
Called Castlemere. But Cass didn't go on the raid. He didn't... It was just Sutherland himself in our canoe that went, you see. So Corporal Cass didn't come on that. It was just Sutherland and I. But we both went down to Cabrit.
Mm-hmm.
By jeep.
What, just you and Sutherland and Cass had been on the Thorn, hadn't he?
Cass was on the Thorn with me, yes. Sutherland wasn't on the Thorn with me. He'd been doing, he'd been allocated something else, you see.
It was just you and Cass, wasn't it?
He wanted, because I was Sutherland's mucker, and Sutherland was going with
SAS.
The SAS, and...
So you picked your kit up.
Well, so they sent for me, you see. Well, I just got just a few things. I didn't have much kit to go up with, just... few necessary things, you know, like razor and things like that. We took razors with us at the time. And washing stuff, change the socks and things. That's all we had. Never trained very much. In fact, I don't remember bathing at all. Because when we got to Siwa, we were off right away.
How did you get to you? Where did you fly
Siwa,
from?
The Oasis.
You fly there from?
Yeah, from Mersa Matruh.
Right.
From Alexander to Mersa Matruh, we landed there, and then from Mersa Matruh to Siwa.
Right.
Didn't take long at all. We could, same track we came up afterwards, but in the jeep, you know, it took a long time then.
Okay, so what happened?
There was a marvellous sight there, though. I always remember the, as we were coming in over Mersa Matruh, the line was at Sidi Barani then, or Hellfire. Yeah, Sidi Barani, that was almost on the Egyptian frontier, the line was.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the railway line, you see the railway trucks going up, loaded with troops and lorries and tanks on the road going up, all going up to the front.
Right.
You can see the shell explosions from Tilly Varane, where they were shelling up there.
Right.
And the long trains of ambulances coming back from the front there into the casualty clearing station there. It was a huge area, the casualty clearing station, of the wounded. And it was all in one, so to speak.
See the whole thing.
I would remember. Yeah. Very rarely you get that opportunity of, you know, being up high and seeing the whole lot. Seeing the destroyers coming up from Alex, going into Mersa Matruh Harbour to refuel or drop whatever they're doing there.
Uh-huh.
A lot of destroyers were used as transport for cargo transport and things, right. Supplies, you know. So they were fast and quick. No, I remember that though, seeing the whole layout of this nation, the whole war going on.
Is this when you went landing at Mersey or taking off?
We landed, no, as we were coming over.
Right.
We were high up, we were circling Mersey Metro.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see all this. See, the city of Verani must have been about 20 or 30 miles away, but you could see
right.
You see the whole lot, even the shell fire and everything else, you know.
Gosh.
Yeah, I remember that.
So when you flew down to Siwa?
And we flew to Siwa, and loaded it up straight away, and off we went.
Just you and Sutherland flew down, or...?
Yeah, just both. Sterling as well, he met up with everybody there,
right.
And then we went up to the north of the Sand Sea, around to the north of the Sand Sea, to what we called Paddy Main's Rendezvous.
Yeah.
It was a big rendezvous there for different types of the LRDG as well, isn't it? It was a lot of caves and canyons and things there. And it was a protection from the air as well, you know.
What vehicles were you using at this time? Did they have the Willis Jeeps there?
At that time, we had the German staff car.
That's what you're...
But Sterling had a Ford V8. And he kept having trouble with the heating with it. But I was telling you about those canisters, you know, they put on the front.
Mm.
They call them condensers.
Yeah.
If they condense the...
You reuse the water.
They condense the steam that came from the radiator.
Yeah.
And then it turned to water, and then it was pumped back in, or drawn back in, and you didn't lose any water, so to speak, so you no longer without water. There's an article on the condenser in one of the SAS books. I can't remember now, though.
Right.
Anyway, then we went up, as I say, we went up to the rendezvous, and then we started off. Got to this caravan route outside Bardia.
How many of you went?
Benghazi.
How many?
There were two raids combined to start with. And Paddy Main had one raid, and he was going further on towards Tripoli way.
So how many of you sort of would be in each group?
Well, there were about five or six. There was some 1,500 weight trucks as well.
Mm-hmm.
There must have been about 14 or 15 in each group, something like that.
Right.
We were going to slightly different places. We were going to Bardia, but we didn't go anyway, because, as I say, we got blown up, but not that time.
So was that... So you landed at Siwa, you went up to this caravan route near Bardia.
We landed at Siwa. We rendezvoused at the north of the Sand Sea, just north of Siwa, and organised ourselves there to what we were going to do. And then Captain Allett and Sutherland and myself got into this, what do you call it, Mercedes-Benz, it's called a German staff car.
Right.
We still kept the palm tree on it, you know, the Africa horse on it.
Uh-huh.
And loaded up. And I had a job loading the canoe properly, because we had to pack it properly so it wouldn't break, you know.
Yeah. They're quite fragile, aren't they?
Oh, they were, yeah. Well, in fact, the other party that went further up, they couldn't do it because the canoe had fractured, one of the frames had fractured, so they couldn't do it.
Right. But so you loaded this into the German staff car, your canoe.
Yeah, and then we...
You, Alec, and Sutherland.
Traveling along quite serenely, and then... Woof, up it went. Because as soon as it went up, everything stopped. Everyone got out. They all got out of their car, but stood where they were for a while, you know.
Yeah.
And then they made their way carefully over towards us. And, what was it? Sterling and Lewis, I think it was. Major Lewis, Captain Lewis. Lieutenant. And they came over. And had a look at Sutherland and me, you know. But my mind didn't look too bad at first, because although the shot would have gone right up through, you know. But anyway, they bound it up and they said, "Do you want morphine?" I said, "No, it's all right." I said, "It'll pain will go off in a minute, you know." And Sutherland was the same, and his hand was looked really badly mangled up, because he had his hand outside, I believe.
Right.
On the left hand side, because I was high up, sitting up behind on the baggage.
Right.
Because that's what I called it, on the left-hand side, I suppose.
Was Alec driving, was he?
I can't remember whether Mercedes was the right-hand drive or left-hand drive. I think it was probably a left-hand
driver, isn't it? So it would have been Sutherland.
That's what it probably was. You know, he was driving.
Driving with it.
It's very boring, you know, driving. It wasn't fast, only about 10 to 15 miles an hour at the most.
Right.
At the times, you know. So that's probably what it was. He just steering one hand, had his left hand out, and of course, off it went. The left front wheels had gone in, the whole the engine had been blown out that way. Alec got away with it, and he was quite alright. I don't remember any noise. All I remember was blackness for just a few seconds, and that was all. No noise or anything. And my ears were ringing a bit afterwards.
Yeah. So what happened then? You and Sutherland.
Well, one of the Rhodesian drivers was picked out, or the volunteer anyway. They let one of the small cars, loaded Sutherland and me on, and he just brought us back to the Egyptian frontier.
This is the old ERG. Rhodesian.
He was a Rhodesian.
Had they seen what happened, had they, and come and got
you? They were with us, they were guiding us, you see.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time they did guide us. They knew exactly where they were all the time. You know?
Yeah.
And they were the only ones, couldn't navigate at that time. This was early days, you see.
Yeah.
They were the only ones who could navigate. Yeah, it was interesting to watch him all the time, you know, with the thumb compass, adjusting it and everything else. And we just say, where are we? How far did we do? Oh, we said we did about 100 miles or so we'd done now. Only got so much to go. It was about 300 miles altogether, I think it was.
Right.
But in places, it was quite very slow. And you had to avoid a lot of places that the other trucks went because you couldn't afford to get stuck in them.
So was it just him? He just took you and Sutherland back, didn't he?
Yeah, Sutherland, to Seaway. And then Seaway, we loaded onto another truck and taken up to Merseyrail. And there, the question arose of whether we should go to the casualty clearing station, which was just way on the beach, towards the beach, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the chaps avoided against it. He just said, no, if I were you, he said, I'd get on the plane, he said, and go straight to Alex.
Right.
To watch the Sutherland, this was. You know.
Uh-huh.
So we got on this plane. It was, I forget what it was now, it was like a civilian plane. Anyway, we whipped this off to Alex, and that was it.
Right.
The end of it.
So that was, you never actually got to complete an operation with the SAS in the desert?
Oh, yes, we did afterwards, yes. The Rhodes was the second one.
Right.
The first one was, but near Bardia, we went to Fluka Aerodrome.
Hold on, so it was much. You did some operations with the SAS before you were injured.
Before that one, yeah, that's right. Before this was, we went up with the normal route with the lorries this time, not the Seaway, but straight up to Fluka. I forget where the line was now.
Was this before you were injured?
Yeah, before, yes.
So it was after you'd been
that's right,
with the thorn in the Adriatic, right. You came back, yeah. You went